I'm Faith Middleton. It's great to have you joining the party on this special edition of the Food Schmooze here on WNPR in Connecticut, Rhode Island, Massachusetts, and New York, including the East End of Long Island. We said to ourselves, well, we're going to do something special on this day. And we were looking at all kinds of topics. And then we said, you know what? What do we have the most fun on? Let's do a special edition of the Food Schmooze. And everybody agreed to come in for this. So this is really kind of fun. My food buddies are here. Senior producer Lori Mack, senior contributor Chris Prosperi of Metro Beast Restaurant in Simsbury, Connecticut, producer Jonathan McNichol, and you can tell your friends no matter where they live, they can listen to the Food Schmooze from anywhere in the world, as many people do, at WNPR.org. Hey, everybody.
Hey.
All right, I have news, and that news is drinking 2 cups of hot chocolate a day may help keep your brain healthy and thinking sharp, and this is according to a new Harvard study. When subjects drank cocoa, scientists could see increased blood flow to the brain.
This is really good news.
This is such good news.
This explains Lori Mack's genius.
Amazing.
That's the nicest thing you've ever said, but you know.
And I'm sure if they did a study, they would find out. If we went to our most brilliant people, we would find out.
I wonder if there's a specific
great composers, Einstein,
kind of chocolate.
But they all drink hot chocolate.
I wonder if chocolate ice cream would work.
Famous surgeons, famous athletes,
and
singers.
Does it have to do with the heating of the chocolate?
Ooh,
I need to know more information.
Right.
Because what if your hot chocolate gets cold? Do you drink it? Still drink it?
Well, like you said, does ice cream do the same thing?
I don't know.
Is it a certain type
and
of chocolate?
And if it increases blood flow, that means that as you get older, all the more important to have hot chocolate.
We should have hot chocolate every show now.
Every day.
Yes. Yes. I love hot chocolate.
Now, why does it have to be hot? Why isn't just having a couple squares of dark chocolate? Why isn't that the same?
Lori's like, right on it.
Deserves a whole show.
Study.
Okay. Yeah, Lori's going to read
on that.
She's got
Happy
the chocolate
New Year.
In her.
Okay, now, here's the deal. The martini competition that I do and the buddies are all there. We're all here. In June every year is going to happen this year as always, and of course we're letting you know if you would like to come. You get to sample at these giant number of martini stations.
Lots
and food is all over the place, and then you vote and you are responsible for selecting
good cocktails.
The you know, plus incredible
food.
Innovative martinis and great food. All of this is good, but here is the exciting news for this year. According to Dean Orton, we are going to televise it for Connecticut Public Television,
very
CPTV.
Cool.
So mixologists, guests, get ready for this. In June, you will see that this is going to be on television.
Interesting.
So get ready, mixologists, for your moment of fame on television this time. Yep, we're moving up in the world. Next year, it's going to be a movie.
Yeah.
Here's what I want to know from people. Is there a food truck from anywhere in the Northeast that you think we should know about? We want to know.
A lot.
We want to know its name so we can celebrate it here on the Food Schmooze. You can search the Faith Middleton Show on Facebook. You can tweet us at FaithWNPR. You can go to our site, WNPR.org, and leave a message at the Faith Middleton Show.
Or better yet, you could just drive right up to the front door.
Yeah, beep the horn.
And we'll come right down.
I'm serious.
We'll let you know right on the spot.
Because we want to do a special thing here with you. We want to celebrate our food trucks. And
there's a lot of good ones.
All your friends, you who work on them, you who've created them, anywhere in the Northeast, if there's one that's your favorite, anywhere in the Northeast, we want to know what it is here on the Food Schmooze. So please call and tell us.
I want a nice hot dog food truck.
A hot dog?
There's got to be many.
Yeah, really good hot dog.
Really good hot dog food
with
truck.
No mad cow.
No, just really good hot dogs. Local hot dogs.
Farm. Like, where's your steak man? Your steak
man. He has a little cart, but he doesn't have a truck. He has a cart out in front.
Well, but think of that.
Yeah, maybe he can get a truck.
Come to New Haven. Oh, steak hot dogs.
Oh, my gosh.
Can you imagine sirloin hot dogs?
Heaven.
Oh.
How about a mac and cheese? That's another one on a food truck that I want to see.
You know, we may find out when we hear from people about these great people. We're going to find out about
I'm still happy with the cupcake truck. I'm pretty happy with that.
That's your New Haven, right?
We still have your t-shirt,
I'm
right?
pretty happy with them.
Cupcake truck.
So here's something from our listener, Fuchima's listener, Mickey Robinson in Greenwich, who's our buddy. He's a buddy of mine. He's a buddy on the Fuchmoos. And he sent us something so incredible. And it is from Leah's Pralines in New Orleans.
Oh.
Mickey was there. And Lola, his wife Lola, was there, as I call her, because she is Creole. And so here we go. They stopped in. Mickey found it. These Leah's Pralines. And these are bacon pralines. And so...
Did you actually
my
get to try those?
Goodness. Bacon pecan brittle is what it is.
That was so
delicious that it was crazy. Mickey Robinson in Greenwich, Connecticut, thank you so much for that. And now I await the subscription to my workout facility because that was so good.
Do they do mail order?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
Leah's, L-E-A-H, in New Orleans.
All right.
Okay.
Research.
Okay.
Now, here we received an email from Charles Margolis. I don't know if you remember him. He says, I listen to the holiday music from starting at the night of Thanksgiving, right straight through Christmas Day into New
Me
Year's.
Too.
And, you know, we do too. And so he said, I really appreciate it. Once I was listening and there you were reading one of my poems. He said, so I decided to send you another one. It's called Last Wish. If I were to die in the night and my spirit was taken, I would miss the sublime taste of turkey, ribs, and bacon. If I were asked to review my life and provide clarification, when I came to my greatest regret, there would be no hesitation. I would not wish for wealth or fame or some unfulfilled dream. I would wish instead that I had eaten more chocolate fudge ice cream. Mm. That is from Charlie Margolis, our Food Schmooze pal. And we say Happy New Year to you, Charlie.
I think that should be a card. That's great.
Yeah. Very good. Charlie's got away with the poems. Very nice. All right, let's play a game. What do you think would be the most unusual restaurants around the country, really? I mean, we've had some restaurants on the show that we've chosen because their names are fun and they're puns. But these are restaurants that are very unusual combinations. We found some of them. Somebody did a poll and a story for a blog, eater.com. And so we were going through them, and I thought, well, this is kind of really quite interesting. And here's what I'm talking about. I'm talking about a place called Great Bow in Las Vegas. Great Bow has four seats. That's a small two-top and a counter with two stools. It is located in the front part of a Las Vegas hair salon.
Nice.
Called Touch.
Oh, great.
So it is apparently excellent. The chef, Sheridan Sue, offers a menu of steamed buns, sesame noodles, rice, and salad. All quite good. It's actually one of the more exciting eating places in Las Vegas. So that's Great Bow. That's part of a hair salon.
And somehow they've hermetically sealed it between the two.
Yes,
so there's
right.
no.
Yes, they're all wearing hair nets.
You know, in Southbury, there's a bait shop and gas station.
There's one in East Haven, actually.
Really?
Yes,
okay.
Right.
I'm not saying what
the
combinations
on the.
There's a bar in Oxford. There's a barber post office all in one.
Okay.
So,
so
I think
why
that's
not a restaurant?
But none of these
so why can't we mix
hair
up
in your food?
Yeah, exactly.
Well, yeah, I don't even.
Well,
there's a hair salon
in
Guilford called A Breath of Fresh Hair, which always kind of freaks me out a little bit. And I think this is sort of exactly what it is. Yeah.
So in Chicago, there's a place called Oasis Cafe. It's hidden in the back of a jewelry store. And what it is there's a Middle Eastern lunch counter. So you walk into the jewelry store, and in the back you find of the jewelry store a Middle Eastern lunch counter. It's called the Oasis, and they make tabbouleh, lamb over saffron rice, baba ganoush, hummus, and falafel. And they all do all kinds of platters. So that's interesting, a way to secure that if you're not doing so well with one thing, you can always fall back. On the other, you can either be selling watches.
That's being helpful,
or you can be
serving baba ganoush. Yeah,
or
you could get a watch with your baba ganoush.
Mm. Yeah, okay. So here's a big question, because there is nothing like, according to this blog, like enjoying a salad with a hint of new car smell. And that's because Twin Creeks Cafe is located inside the Frank Kent Honda dealership in Fort Worth, Texas. So
these are some pretty strange combinations.
Yeah. How do these things happen?
Buy a car, cafe.
Well, you know what, people, it costs a lot of money to open these places, and so people are teaming up, like, you know?
I think they all have one thing in common.
Well, you remember that there was a Polish-Indian restaurant combo in New Haven for a while. It didn't last too long, but I was so... Well, I was laughing so hard on them. I just couldn't even.
What do they all have in common, Laurie?
I think they all have extra square footage that they don't know what to do with.
Well, they're trying to, you know, save money. And I think it's not a bad idea. Yeah. So, a Honda dealership. And if you're hungry looking at cars, you just go into Twin Creeks Cafe and, you know, sandwiches, burgers, salads, the whole lineup. A salmon ribeye steak.
Oil change in
Very
dinner.
Nice.
Yeah, that's perfect. Yeah.
And a brand new Honda.
No, listen. You know what? I'm always bored when I get my oil change in those places. There's a television,
They've always got coffee and a vending machine. This is like that on steroids.
Yeah, the place I go has popcorn, and you sit there and watch bad television. Yeah. But I would totally go for a steak or a salmon while my oil is being changed.
Well, are you going to be in San Francisco? Because I have another treat
for
you.
Go for it.
You can go to Kennedy's Irish Pub and Curry House. That is an Irish pub and that also sells Indian curry. And, you know, the thing where they blend is where they have beer with the curry.
Mm. Yeah, that's how that works. Makes sense.
But there are a lot of – it's odd.
But wait, that one makes more sense than the other ones. Let's just say that.
And there's air hockey. I forgot to say that.
Wow, that's a pub.
Yeah. Doesn't seem as natural as like a wash and brew place. You know, the laundromats where you wash your clothes and you go next door. There's a little pub there. This just –
No, you're not.
It could be if you start.
The more I think of the car place one, the more I'm happy about that. Anything because I waste
waiting.
A lot of time in my car place just sitting there twiddling my thumbs.
It's like the laundromat. It's perfect.
Do you see why we call this a special edition? Okay, here we go. Now, this is called in Flushing, New York, so very close to us. Temple Canteen, because it is in the basement of a Hindu temple. It is a canteen serving what one of the food writers, Peter Meehan, calls some of the best dosas in the city. Ooh. And he said they're doing flour, lentil rice, flour, loads of butter, a giant searing hot griddle. And it's in the bottom of this Hindu Temple Society meeting hall. Okay.
And you, just to clarify, you said Flushing. Doses.
Doses not, are, yes.
Not docents.
No,
doses.
Doses are these... lentil meal round things that are usually stuffed with curried mashed potatoes and other things. Delicious. Just delicious.
Yeah. And it makes sense being there because, you know, it's got to be good.
Yes. Yep. It's got to be good.
Right. Well, here's the Facundo Cafe in Houston. Houston seems to have quite a bit of this. The tiny cafe is attached to and serves a car wash in Houston. Burger sandwiches is what you're talking about, Jonathan. Tacos.
And Chris.
It kind of bowling alley style, they say. And it's not a gimmick. Everyone seems to love the homemade salsa. So Facundo Cafe attached to a car wash.
And do you drive through both?
Wash, wax, and
Why
burger.
Why not? Yeah.
Maybe at the same time.
Maybe. Yeah.
Drive-through. Ooh. Yeah.
Drive-through in the car wash.
Drive-through in the car wash.
There you go.
Yeah.
Just bring an umbrella.
We have Rocco's Italian Sausage in Philadelphia, known for great sausage, but it's connected to a Home Depot. So the owner... You know, you just shop, and then you go from your shopping experience at Home Depot to get sausage and sit down and have some sausage.
How about around here? Who doesn't go to IKEA and have Swedish meatballs?
Oh, yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Right?
The Home Depots all have, like, a sausage truck in front of them and things like that.
Yeah, so I just, you know, when
so
you
what
see
would you
these
do?
Things, what would I do?
If you were going to combine a business, something? Another business with a restaurant, what would the two things be?
I do a bar laundromat.
Ball laundromat.
Yeah, anything where you have to wait. I think that's
the
key.
Yeah, I think that's key.
I don't know why that doesn't happen
more
often.
I
think I do
a bar hair salon.
Bar hair salon.
The Cinema
really
Draft House. I love those.
Oh yeah, those are really good.
I would do a bar mammogram.
Are you bored while you're waiting for your?
No, you're not bored.
You need to take the edge off.
You need to take the edge off.
Then I would do a bar.
This conversation got more complicated.
A bar dentist.
That would be very
a bar dentist.
Wait, is that
would be. But you know, you can't have four. Without, well, of course,
no.
at this point, we don't do that, right? That's just children who get – because then you can't eat or drink for a half an hour afterwards.
Oh, maybe a fluoride drink. Maybe it could be like a vodka cocktail fluoride thing.
But you're going to like have your teeth cleaned and then go
– and dirty them up.
Won't that anger the dentist?
What, to have a drink? No, yes. They don't say don't drink, please.
Well, they say –
well, they said what? No, my
don't get your teeth dirty. You're going to go get your teeth dirty.
Vodka doesn't get my teeth dirty.
They just say brush after you do.
Yeah.
it's a bar with toothbrushes all down there.
No, Faith, I like yours. Yours had some good ones. I like the bar.
What could we have to go with radio experience? Let's think about that.
Yeah, radio cafe.
That's right.
Yeah. Studio, right? Open right. Studio.
All right, we have a little bit more news. This is a discovery in the supermarket. And I noticed something in the packaging, and I thought, why is that there? So stick with us. We've got more Food Schmooze coming your way on this special holiday edition. We'll be right back.
You see my grandma, she's got this soup. She makes it once a year. And it tastes so good that the old town knows. When she makes that soup, it's good to hear. All the ladies, they try to know all the things that she puts in. They say, please, please, please.
Beans ain't cornbread, had a fight. Beans not cornbread, out of sight. Cornbread said, now that's all right. Meet me on the corner tomorrow night. And I'll be ready. I'll be ready tomorrow night. I'll be ready. I'll be ready tomorrow night. I'll be ready. I'll be ready tomorrow night. Now, that's what Beans said to cornbread. I'll be ready tomorrow night.
Beans told cornbread, you ain't straight. You better wake up or I'll gas your gate. Been in this pot since 2:30. Swelling and a puffing and a almost due. I'll be ready. I'll be ready tomorrow night. That's what Beans said to cornbread. Always get mad at me, but I ain't mad at you. I'll be ready. I'll be ready tomorrow night. That's what Beans said to cornbread. I'll be ready tomorrow night.
All right, I'm Faith Middleton with our Food Schmooze team. We have senior producer Lori Mack, producer Jonathan McNichol, and senior contributor Chris Prosperi of Metro Beast Restaurant in Simsbury, Connecticut. I'm Faith Middleton in the Food Schmooze party here on WNPR. This special edition can be heard Wednesdays at 3 and 9 normally and Saturdays at 10. You can join the conversation with us on Facebook. Simply search The Faith Middleton Show. I want to say thanks to everybody, including senior contributor Chris, and to Eugenia Ambitruda and Mary and Roy. And we thank you first and foremost for listening to the show. It's one of the most fun things we do. And in this week that we have here where it's in between the holidays and we were saying, well, what can we do at this time of year? And we were going to do various shows and we said, oh, well, let's do an extra Food Schmooze just because it's fun. Okay, I'm in the supermarket and, you know, you can buy tuna fish in a can, of course. You can buy it in one of these, you know, it's like, what do you call this?
Foil pouch, kind of.
Yeah. And so I thought, well, maybe I'll do that. You know, this got to be pretty good because it's not in that tin. And maybe this is a little bit better for you. So I bought it, Bumblebee Premium Albacore Tuna in Water, went home, and I was just standing around about to make a tuna salad with it. And I looked at the ingredients, and it says this. White tuna, water, vegetable broth, salt, propophosphate, contains tuna and soy. And I thought, what is soy
and where
doing
was it?
In my packet of tuna fish?
Filler.
Wow.
Why would Bumblebee do that and not do it in a can? As far as I can see, it's not in the can.
Yeah. Wow,
yeah, and it's a product
soy.
Of Thailand. That's the other thing.
Well, that's where most of the canning of tuna is done.
Or the packaging.
The packaging.
Though the corporation is in San Diego, California. Yeah. I don't know what pyrophosphate is.
A preservative, I would guess.
Okay. I don't know why there's vegetable broth in here. It's certainly not in the canned version. Yeah. In this
flavor
this
enhancer.
Can. Yeah, but
it
why do you need
flavor?
That?
This is what it says on the Bumblebee website. Vegetable broth is added to our canned tuna products as an optional flavoring ingredient. It enhances the flavor of tuna, resulting in a more mild, delicate taste. The broth currently used is derived from vegetables such as beans, peas, celery, or carrots. The broth also contains a soy protein, which is why some of our products declare contain soy.
I wonder why they would need vegetable broth to make the tuna taste better.
You know, and this is the thing. When you use an all-natural product, you don't have to do anything to enhance the flavor.
And I don't know why there's soy.
This isn't a definitive answer, but it looks – what they're saying is soy is in a lot of processed, canned, boxed foods at this point.
As a filler?
And do they say why?
No.
I'm guessing filler. It's cheap.
What in the world is happening to our food?
Yeah, good question.
Why would we do that?
Soy on a canned tuna label most likely means hydrolyzed soy protein, a form of MSG.
Ah,
oh, it's how they get away without saying MSG. There's a lot of different ways.
Is that
now.
Right?
Yeah, there's
I
mean, a couple
I haven't fact-checked that or anything, but you know, it says it on the internet, so it's probably right.
No, I've heard that a couple times now that there's different labeling things they can use for MSGs. They don't have to say MSG anymore.
They
there's
can
different.
Say spices.
Yeah, or
right?
No, they can't say spices, but glutamates or some other kind of glutamate is one of them. There's
MSG occurs naturally in hydrolyzed soy protein.
Yeah.
And it's part of the hydrolysis process. I don't know what any of those words I just said meant, but you know.
Mm-hmm. But you liked saying them.
I did. Yeah. Has something to do with water, I think.
Okay, I'm throwing.
All right, she's throwing it out. She's done. It's like I'm going back to canned tuna.
I'm very disappointed.
No, I think I always tell people when they ask me questions like that, read the labels, and if you're not comfortable, buy something else. There's tons of.
There's been a lot of articles lately about MSG not being so frowned upon.
Yes, I was interviewed in one for the Chicago Tribune, and what I said was, from what I understand, it can give you a headache, but it's not toxic. It can't kill you. There's no.
But why would you want to get a headache from your food anyway?
Yeah, exactly.
Well, what does MSG do?
It's just like salt. It's a flavor enhancer.
Yeah. Why would you use salt? Why would you use MSG? Yeah. Probably cheaper than salt.
No, right? I think it brings out – MSG
it's
brings
different.
Out more flavor.
Yeah.
That's the thing with those chicken broths that are mostly water. You add a little MSG to them, and they really bring out the teeny bit of chicken that's in those broths. Mm. It brings it up. So it is – yeah, cheaper is the reason, but it's because it brings the flavors way high.
Lots and lots of really good canned tuna out there.
And they're always on sale. Yeah. That's why I like them.
Does anybody ever make tuna salad sandwich?
Yes.
Yeah,
of course.
From real tuna.
Are we defining real tuna?
Yes,
fresh tuna.
A tuna fillet, fresh tuna.
I do, because sometimes at the end of the weekend, we're closed on Sunday, so sometimes on Saturday if there's leftover tuna, and I don't want to bring it home and cook it, you know, sear it and eat it rare I'll bring it home, put it in a pot, boil it, and then strain it, chill it, and then we make tuna salad out of it.
Delicious,
Yeah, totally.
What do you put in your tuna salad?
See, I'm a tomato vinaigrette guy. I'm not a mayonnaise guy. I know everyone's going to shoot me for that one.
Oh, that sounds good.
I take sun-dried tomatoes and put it in a blender, just a little bit with the ones in olive oil, and then I put in red wine vinegar, salt, pepper, and then a little Dijon mustard, and then I drizzle while it's going. I drizzle in a little more extra virgin olive oil, and then I mix that celery, onion.
I would
onion.
Love that.
It's killer on a buttered croissant.
I would love
I'm
that.
I'm pretty classic. Mm-hmm. I do red onion, usually. Yep. Sometimes I'll do white onion. Yep. You know, salt and pepper. And I might do some celery powder. And sometimes I've done curry in my tuna salad.
That's really
done
good,
a curried,
yeah,
curried
that's really good.
Tuna salad.
Hellman's?
Oh, Hellman's, yes. Hellman's.
Yeah. There's no other mayonnaise.
A little Dijon in there, maybe?
Ooh, that's
not
good too.
Not in the curry one.
Well, right.
But
right.
The other one could have some in it. Do you like it that way?
Yeah, honey? Yeah. Huh. Or even pickle juice. Maybe this is weird.
I've seen recipes for that.
People do put diced up pickle in the tuna salad.
Like a dill relish I'll put in there, too.
Sometimes. Yeah.
But just the juice.
How about egg? I saw a recipe recently with hard-boiled egg in the tuna salad, which I've never tried.
Oh.
But I just was looking through recipes, and I'm like, that's interesting.
Well, have you ever put tuna on either pasta or pizza? Have you ever made –
I've put tuna on pasta tons of times.
Pizza.
But on pizza, there are some places that will make a pizza out of tuna.
Yeah. In Italy,
it's
too,
good
they
with
use
the red sauce.
They use the olive oil one, right? The tuna canned in olive oil instead of water.
Yeah,
they put that on pizza, and that's
really good.
That's interesting.
Yeah. There's you know what? It's very inexpensive. You know, and like I was saying earlier, you buy it when it's on sale. You know, they have those 4 for whatever or 3 for whatever. And there's so many different things you can do with it, from the old style tuna casserole to different tuna salads to pasta, right?
Or you can get the canned kind that comes free with vegetable broth.
There you go.
Just right in there.
Just eat it right out of the can.
And soy.
And soy.
Yeah.
Got soy in
there. Be careful what's going on with our food. Just read the label. There's plenty of all
natural.
Let's stay on the subject
for a minute. Would you eat canned vegetables as opposed to frozen vegetables?
Do the canned ones have a ton of salt? They can.
I still, in a pinch, will buy something canned, though I prefer frozen.
I have a waiter religiously that comes in with his own dinner, and he eats canned corn. And he comes onto the stove, you know, onto the back of the line. He gets a little saute pan and he heats up his canned corn. And of course, all of us are like, you know, in an aquarium looking at him, you know, because we're like, look at that. What kind of fish is that? No, because we're like, what is that? And we all grab spoons when he's not looking and taste it, because again, I had canned corn when I was a kid, because I think freezing wasn't where it is now. It's not bad.
But you know the secret trick with that canned corn?
Uh-huh.
You can do it with frozen too, but especially the canned corn, is that you simmer it in milk.
That's what he does.
And it becomes sweet and tastes like real corn.
And cream corn.
The milk and the sugar does something. It's really
fun. When we were kids, and maybe I'm the only one, but when we were kids, we got canned corn for one reason. Because we lived in Forest Hills near a little lake in Flushing Meadow Park, and we went fishing with the canned corn.
Really?
You put a little corn on the hook and throw it in.
And what were you fishing for?
Who knows what was in that lake? It was polluted.
License plates.
Yeah, no. It was probably some kind of carp or something that we'd catch in there. I don't even remember. But we would always put little corn.
Because, that's interesting.
It's harder to dig for worms when you lived in New York City.
I guess.
Central Park.
Yeah, Central Park.
Just careful walking.
But yeah, I think canned foods are fine. I mean, canned beans. There used to be this big thing about canned beans.
They're a little mushy, though. That's the only thing about canned beans.
But what about if you're doing a puree with them?
Well, then that's a little bit different. My grandmother used to open a can of asparagus and mash it up with a fork and then put it in a pan and make scrambled eggs and
that
asparagus.
Sounds good.
There's something about asparagus, though, that does have the inside liner taste to it.
Oh, yeah.
The canned one? Yeah.
Yeah, there's something kind of
But
strange.
With a little scrambled eggs, it's not bad.
Right. Exactly.
I made a soup the other day where I just took onion, celery, and carrot, sautéed it with a stick of pepperoni. Right? And then this is the easiest soup in the world. And then I took a can of tomatoes, three cans of beans, and a can of chicken broth, threw it all in there and simmered it, and then threw some ditalini pasta. And I made – this is a recipe from one of my waiters, probably one of the best pasta fagioles I've ever had. And it was basically – except for the sautéed onion, carrot, and celery, which was some work, and one stick of pepperoni that I diced – and then just threw the cans in, let it simmer, put the pasta in, and it was done. And it was so
easy. What kind of pasta did you use?
The ditalini.
Oh,
yeah, the little tubes.
Wow, that sounds so fun.
It was the best pasta fagioli. We were all standing around and going, oh my gosh, this is so good. And it was nothing but opening a couple cans.
This is what artists have always done. They had a party, they had people over, a couple jugs of the cheapest wine possible, a big gallon, you know, pot of this kind of soup that costs almost nothing. Couple loaves of bread, cheap bread, out on the corner, bunch of glasses and napkins, and you're done. And it's just an excuse to have people over, and nobody's expecting all the stuff that goes with that
party. A little cheese on top. It was phenomenal.
That sounds wonderful. Not expensive. And we'd all be having friends over much more if we did it this way.
And that's
not a lot
of hard work.
I know. Okay, so was looking at Elise McClay, who decided to do a story in Connecticut Magazine called "Tis the Season." And it is true that this is the time of year that people have been dashing off to these beautiful country inns. And they will do so as winter goes on. Some people are lucky enough to take off for warmer climates for a week or a month. But, you know, at this time of year, it really is pretty beautiful. And so she was saying that if you want to go to a country inn, there are still some terrific places to go. And that would be Thomas Henkelman in Greenwich. And that's true. That's Homestead Inn. And that is a Relais and Chateau property, beautiful. As she was saying, the Mayflower Inn, and the Mayflower Inn has changed. Yeah. Yes, in Washington, Connecticut, it's changed owners. Mm-hmm. And so they have a whole new team there. The Grace Hotel organization bought them. They're still in the Relais and Chateau Association category. Jonathan Cartwright is cooking there. He comes from Kennebunkport. So he's from the Black Forest region of Germany, as Thomas Henkelman is. So they'll be having a kind of duel. So we'll see. We'll see what interesting things are going to happen.
Beautiful settings, both of them.
At the Mayflower. And then there's Winvian, which is so beautiful.
Yeah, that's
so
beautiful.
Oh, my goodness.
And great food, right?
The food is so delicious. It's so real. Yeah. You know, there's no monkeying around with food.
And those are funky rooms, right? They have style. And
what about anybody hear anything about Gino Auriemma's Grill?
No.
Where is that?
He opened a grill. It's in Store Center,
right
near the main campus.
Yeah. Wow.
He likes Italian food.
Really?
So he's going into the school of his grandmother's, 83-year-old grandmother's, you know, kind of version of Italian food.
And the girls do
pizza
rock.
And then
I watch basketball. It's more fun to watch the girls play basketball at UConn than it is to watch the basketball, I think.
That's good.
I'm going to get in trouble for saying that.
But yeah,
they do.
No.
They know they're a great team. That's part of Connecticut now, women's basketball. We're known for it all over the world.
That's true.
Yep. And a lot of those women getting better contracts in other countries than they can get here, though we see that change a little bit. And then some of them are making money there and coming back here as coaches. And so life marches on. Yeah. Interesting.
Right.
Hey, here's the thing. We have coming back on the show with us Cree Lefevre, and she is author of Fish, 54 Seafood Feasts. And there were so many fish recipes. It's getting to be that time. You hear us talking about tuna. It's getting to be that time for fish as we start to get into winter. And so we thought it'd be fun in this special edition to have her back and talk about that. I'm Faith Middleton with the gang, and this is the Food Schmooze Party, a special edition coming to you in Connecticut, Rhode Island, Massachusetts, and New York, including the East End of Long Island. You can tweet us at FaithWNPR. Join the conversation with us on Facebook. Search The Faith Middleton Show. More delicious conversation after a quick break. Please stay with us. Faith Middleton with the gang, and this is the Food Schmooze Party coming to you in Connecticut, Rhode Island, Massachusetts, and New York, including the East End of Long Island. If you want to see all the things we're talking about, the recipes we're talking about, go to WNPR.org. Click on Programs for the Faith Middleton Show. All right, here we go. It's Champagne Romance Dinner Dance Time. I hope you will join me for my fifth annual Heart to Heart Wine Dinner, February 12th at the beautiful Society Room, 6 p.m. downtown Hartford, parking attached. Music from Alex Nakamovsky and orchestra and his incredible singers. Wines, including champagne from Frederick Wildman and Sons. What a portfolio they have. The stars of our multi-course wine dinner include chefs Chris Prosperi of Metro Beast Restaurant in Simsbury, Jeff Lozotti on 20 Hartford, Jason Subzinski, Casius in New Haven, Brad Stabinski, Chamard Vineyards in Clinton, Stefan Drago, Bell Terrace in Avon, David Sellers, Max Fish in Hartford, Jeffrey Crawford, Jordan Caterers. This has sold out every year for obvious reasons. We're bringing in a special lighting designer from Audio Media Solutions. This is going to be something. Dress is festive. You decide. Tickets are $90 per person to support WNPR and the Food Schmooze. This is all for you to celebrate Valentine's Day on February 12th with lots of other public radio listeners. For tickets, go online to WNPR.org. I hope to see you there. All right, coming back to us, recently we had a guest. There were so many dishes in her cookbook. We have invited Cree Lefevre to come back to us because we were intrigued. We feel as if once you start turning into January and February, yes, you can make all the stews and roasts and that kind of thing that you do. That's fine. But it starts to feel way too heavy. You want to have some beautiful fish. And so
it's a great time for it, too.
It really is. And so we said, Cree, will you come back with us and let's get to some of the recipes that we didn't talk about? And she said, sure. Cree's book is called Fish, 54 Seafood Feasts. Cree, welcome to the show.
Great to be back, Faith.
So you know I'm with Chris and Lori and Jonathan. How did you get into food in this way before we start talking about your trout recipe?
You know, part of the reason I wrote this fish book is because I'm actually a picky fish eater. I like my fish super, super fresh, and I like to be able to eat sustainable fish, and yet sometimes it gets difficult to sort through all that, and I think that that's an experience shared by a lot of people who like fish and tend to just order it out in restaurants instead of cooking it at home. So I wanted to write a book that made fish more approachable for people and a book that did not call for species that are overfished. So that's kind of how I took this project on.
Well, one of the things about this recipe we're going to talk about now that I like a lot is that it features trout.
That's our fish. People fish around here all summer long and catch trout.
Yeah, beautiful. And in Colorado, where my nephew and family is, the trout are just beautiful. So I don't know why we don't see trout on restaurant menus more. I really don't get it.
I've had
it's so
on
delicious.
There for years. I love trout.
Yeah.
It's such a great fish.
So you have a dish for a trout with lemon horseradish cream, and then you have a prosciutto kale and crispy parsnip rounds. So let's talk about that. Let's start with the sauce for the trout.
This whole set of recipes is perfect sort of January food because it's bright tasting with the horseradish cream. It's got a little spice, obviously, and the lemon juice. And yet it's true to the ingredients that we're working with in the winter. So the horseradish cream is really just as simple as could be to mix together freshly grated horseradish, which most people can find anywhere, or you could use jarred if you can't, and mixing it with a little sour cream and some lemon juice. And trout is one of those super sustainable species. It's very sustainably farmed if you're not buying wild, which most of us probably aren't unless we're going fishing ourselves. And yet it's affordable and absolutely delicious. I agree with all of you there.
And so how do you cook the trout?
You know, this trout is just sautéed quickly in butter just to keep it, pop it right in hot butter. It's going to brown and it's going to get smoky, but that's okay. And it hopefully will come out with a nice kind of crispy skin on it. And it's an easy fish to cook because the skin is tasty and gets nice and crispy if you cook it in butter and put a little salt and pepper on it and then push it through that sauce at the same time.
And you can put it into the oven for a few minutes, too, if you want. If you've had it in the on the stovetop, right?
Absolutely. I mean, I'm big on finishing fish in the oven, actually. I like to get a little crispiness on it and then to finish it
Me too.
A fairly low oven because it tends to cook it to sort of perfection without overdoing it.
Okay.
And we think alike because pork and trout have been pork and trout for some reason. I do one with bacon, but prosciutto, anything pork and trout is just a great combination.
Yes. Yes.
Well, Chris, you're going to like this. You're going to like this because Cree has this idea of serving that trout dish, which is so easy to make, and you've got a little horseradish cream thing for it.
Yep.
She's suggesting making prosciutto kale.
That's it.
And this is good. This is olive oil, a shallot, some kale, chop it up, and a little bit of water and kosher salt, and 2 ounces of prosciutto that's cut into these long strips. And so tell us what you do with this.
It's just a quick sauté. You've got your nice fresh kale. Push it around in the pan until it's just a little wilted. I don't like to overcook my kale. I actually, we all eat kale salads even these days. I want it hot and just ever so slightly wilted. Throw in the prosciutto just toward the end to heat it through, and it's just a really fresh, bright, delicious, and super healthy to boot side dish that goes really well with the fish.
So you've got that prosciutto against the trout with that horseradish cream.
Yeah.
That is beautiful. And then the kale, which is so good for you and tastes so good when you put other things in it.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's good. Then I think, all right, that's the end of that recipe. And then I look and I think, no, there's one more thing yet you're saying to make. Crispy parsnip rounds.
Ooh.
Yeah, so I'm a little bit of sometimes I can be a little bit of a traditionalist in a certain sense. I like to think of my plate being balanced by, sort of some greens and maybe something slightly starchy to go with it, with my protein. So I've got my fish and I've got my sort of lovely greens there. And then I've got something a little bit starchy. And this actually brings a nice sweetness that really goes with the sweetness of the trout nicely, because parsnips have a lot of sugar in them naturally. They caramelize nicely and they get kind of crisp. Yeah.
So in a large frying pan, you combine some butter and these parsnips, which you peel and thin sliced, and a little bit of thyme and some salt, and you cook them, stirring frequently for about 20, 25 minutes until they get colored, they become crispy. So they're like potato chips in a certain way.
Yeah, they're not quite that thin, Faith, but they're close. Like they do, you know, they still have a little body to them, so they're not like crispy, but like what you'll have is sort of a crispy edge with a nice softer center, and then there's a little bit of thyme in the recipe just to give it a little complexity, because I love thyme, and I could put thyme probably on my breakfast cereal. So.
Yeah, that sounds good. So we've got two things. One I can't wait to get to, because it's yellowfin tuna with a jalapeno cumin butter. And I want to get to that, because that's the one that we're going to feature from your book at our website. And I love this dish. But first, let's talk about another dish that people overlook. When they go into a fish store, they end up getting salmon, and they skip by Arctic char.
Love Arctic char.
Arctic char is so delicious.
Yep.
So you make it with a tarragon vinaigrette. So let's say it's for four people. You have an Arctic char fillet, some butter, some olive oil, white wine vinegar, a little bit of Dijon mustard, some minced shallot, black pepper, chopped fresh tarragon, and some salt. So how do you cook your Arctic char?
What I do here is I lay the fish on some foil, skin side up, and that way the juices are caught within this little sort of foil surround that you make, that it's sort of supposed to fit the fish. It cooks skin side up for, you know, a few minutes. It's under the broiler, and it gets like a little blackened spots maybe on it, and then comes right out. I mean, it's not difficult to cook it. Obviously, there's variations. One of the problems with cooking fish, of course, is that all our fillets are really different thicknesses. So often, you know, maybe you have a really, really thick one, and it's going to take a little longer. But it couldn't be easier. And then you have the juices that the fish has, you know, sort of put out while it's been cooking. So you still have those juices to put onto the plate when you serve it.
And that vinaigrette, you mix in a small bowl, some kosher salt, olive oil, vinegar, mustard, shallots, some pepper, and tarragon.
Yep.
And you just put a little of that on each plate, and then the fish goes on top. And then you have a recipe in here for roasted sunchokes, radicchio, and carrots. So you see the way these are called feasts, because Cree is doing, you know, whole meals with this. And they're not crazy in their complications. That's what I like about this.
And char is one of those fish that people don't eat a lot of, but is wonderful.
Yeah, I mean, the more you read, obviously, I think all of us are pretty aware that Atlantic farmed salmon is not a good choice for us, pretty right across the board. Arctic char is such a great alternative. I agree with you all. It's actually not, you know, it's a type of trout, actually, but it's sustainably farmed and absolutely delicious and super healthy, too. So I'm a huge fan. I love salmon, and I do buy some salmon. I buy wild coho salmon, but when I don't do that, I buy Arctic char.
This is Cree Lefevre. She has done this book, Fish, 54 Seafood Feasts, and she is back on the show with us again because we wanted to give her a chance to explore some other recipes in the book, because we feel like we're coming into that season where people have been doing a lot of beef, they've been doing a lot of stews and chilies, and just as that calendar starts moving in January, people begin to say, oh, I think it's time for some fish. I need to slim down a little bit. Let's take it easy. And in the spring, we'll pick up everything again. So here is Cree's yellowfin tuna with jalapeno cumin butter. And it starts this way. You want to toast first, as your first step, some cumin seeds and some coriander seeds. Could not be easier. You just put them in a cast iron skillet, put the cast iron skillet on the stove at medium to sort of high heat. It gets really hot. And then you just put these dry cumin seeds on there and your coriander seeds. And the second you can smell them, they're almost done. And then they just, within a second, they start to turn a color. Just take them right off the heat. Now, if you want to grind them up, I put them in my little coffee grinder and go biz, 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 and they're in a powder form. So that's how I do it. And you want to just set that aside. Does that work for you, Cree?
Totally works for me. That's exactly how I toast my seeds, too. This recipe actually incorporates the toasting of the seeds with the searing of the fish. So you're rubbing the fish with the oil, and then you're coating the seeds onto it, and that's helping you so that the fish doesn't stick to the pan as well.
This part of the main dish goes that way, but when we get to the jalapeno cumin butter,
that's
going to be different.
Absolutely.
And that's a butter that goes on this dish. So yellowfin tuna with jalapeno cumin butter. So the oven goes on, a little bit of oil gets rubbed on the tuna steaks. There are four of them. And you salt both sides, and then you sprinkle one of the sides of each tuna steak with these cumin seeds. Then you heat that cast iron skillet over high heat. You wait till it gets very hot before you add the oil. Then you do it. And once you see that the oil is shimmering in the pan, you put the steaks in, cumin side up, so the seeds on the top sides, cumin side up. You cook that 3-4 minutes, and then you turn it. And you cook the cumin-coated side of the tuna for about a minute, and you transfer these to a plate, top each steak, tuna steak, with this jalapeno cumin butter on each portion, and it warms up, and there you go. Now, so the reason I told you to toast your seeds early is this. Cree, let's talk about your jalapeno cumin butter, because this has a bit of a kick.
Yeah, it does have a little bit of a kick, and as you can tell from this book, I really like chilies, and I really like spices like cumin. This is a really big hit, and like you said, in the winter when we're kind of up to our ears with braises and the subtle flavors, this is going to give you sort of like a real pop. And the cooking method, like you were just describing, is super easy because, you know, you're searing the fish, and you're toasting those seeds on the second side really quickly, and then you're putting it in an oven. And so it should be nice and rare, still at the center, but nicely warmed at the same time. And then the butter is going to melt over the top of it in the oven. And it does have these chilies in it. It's got coriander and a jalapeno, really. You can vary, obviously, the heat of any kind of fresh chili, as most people know, by omitting or adding, keeping the seeds in.
So in a small bowl, you mash together butter, shallots, cumin seeds, coriander seeds, and jalapeno. With the seeds chopped up in there. The reason I'm mentioning that to you is that, as Cree has said, if you don't want it to be super hot, don't put the seeds in. Or if you're very, very sensitive to heat, just put a tiny amount of jalapeno or no jalapeno.
Yeah,
you know,
exactly.
It's up to you.
Yeah, it's totally up to you. It would be delicious either way.
I love this. We are with Cree Lefevre, and she is author of Fish, 54 Seafood Feasts. I'm with my buddies on the show, senior contributor Chris Brusberry of Metro Beast Restaurant in Simsbury, Connecticut, senior producer Lori Mack, and producer Jonathan McNichol. Okay, let's turn to pan-fried lime chipotle tilapia with chili corn. The farm tilapia has gotten kind of a bad name. People think it's
dirty,
dirty, trashy, you know, being farmed in a terrible way. You've got a recipe in here for it. How do you protect yourself against that?
One of the key things about buying fish is figuring out where it comes from. So I think that's one of the simplest sort of rules of thumb when you're shopping for fish. I don't buy any fish that's been farmed or caught in Asian countries or really, for that matter, in South America. And that's only because those kind of farming operations are not properly regulated, and you're open to the use of all kinds of antibiotics and all kinds of other feeding practices and cleaning practices that aren't up to standard. So if you're buying U.S. or Canadian-raised tilapia, it's a really sustainable fish that doesn't need a high quantity of fish protein to grow, which is makes it much more sustainable than, say, Atlantic salmon. Mm-hmm. It's a mild white fish. You know, it needs some sauce, but it's completely a functional fish,
good.
And I don't think
And underrated. Okay. It's really one of the best.
And so let me tell you quickly in this final minute we have, it requires the juice of some limes, chipotle chilies in adobo sauce, you can get them in any supermarket, kosher salt, olive oil, the tilapia fillets, a vegetable or peanut oil, some flour, fresh cilantro, and some salt. It comes together so easily, this recipe. Thank you so much once again, Cree Lefevre.
It's been great to be on with you all. It's a lot of fun.
This is a holiday special edition of the Food Schmooze on WNPR. Normally, our show airs Wednesdays at 3 and 9 and Saturdays at noon. We're online anytime. Find the recipes, food products, restaurants, value wines, and easy cocktails we feature at WNPR.org. Click on Programs for the Faith Middleton Show right now. Here's to pleasure, my friends, and remember, never eat more than you can lift. In New Haven. I'm Faith Middleton.
Everybody eats when they come to mind.